Just make sure you press the record button, okay?
Yeah, there it goes. All right, episode 11.
Whoa.
G'day everyone, this is episode 11 of AT3 and we are your Aussie Top 3. My name is Greg, your Captain Boomerang, and once again I'm joined by my fellow Aussies, Little Sherby, Stacey Herbert and the Stinger, Steve Ray. How are you guys?
Good evening.
I'm good. How are you today, Steve? I mean, Greg.
Just don't care about me, just Greg. That's okay. But I'm good too, Stacey. Thanks for asking.
Look, I do care about how you are, Steve. It was just the fact that you completely disregarded the fact that I was on Unfunny Nerd Tangent before you were.
That's right. I probably just didn't listen to that episode. I'm sorry.
Oh, God. We've been gone a couple of weeks and this is what happens.
That's right. You say that. Episode 11, the final episode. we'll be around forever. But tonight we are talking top three debuts. So that first moment where a wrestler arrives on the scene or swaps, swaps companies, or, you know, might get promoted or whatever. They're basically their big debut moment in front of the world, whatever that might be. So this will be an interesting one, I think, because it's a very wide selection to choose from. So, and different criteria can kind of be involved as well, I think. So it'll be interesting to see what you guys select. But of course, Stacey, we always go ladies first. So who have you got?
Alrighty. So my number one debut pick was a no-brainer, really. And you can probably all guess it right off the bat. And yeah, I could have gone for something else to be less predictable, but I wouldn't be picking my favorite debut if I did. So my number one is Chris Jericho.
Of course, yeah.
Yes. Of course, yeah. So Jericho debuted on the August 9th, 1999 episode of Raw is War. In my opinion, this is one of the most well-thought-out debuts in history. For many weeks prior to this, a Millennium Countdown was played out on the Titantron just during random segments of the show. And this all came to a head when the countdown hit zero in the middle of a Rock promo. And for those who aren't aware, you know, in 1999, there wasn't really dirt sheets or anything. Some people suspected it was Jericho. There was even Jericho signs in the crowd, but it wasn't well known at the time. And yeah, so it all builds up to this moment. Jericho's name is revealed on the Titantron and the crowd goes nuts. Now, Jericho had built up enough of a repertoire in WCW to be known, obviously, by the WWF at the time. But yeah, it's just one of the best, most thought out, most well played debuts ever, in my opinion. In the middle of a Rock promo, nonetheless, like I can't think of a better wrestler to hang with the Rock on the mic than Chris Jericho. And yeah, when I think about it, like something that's also so fantastic about a great debut is when you can look back at it and go, yeah, that really paid off and he really met his hype and then some. And that's exactly how I feel about Jericho.
Yeah, I couldn't say anything more to that. Like it's definitely, it's probably the greatest debut in WWF, WWE history, I think. That my opinion anyway. Yeah. And I definitely say that definitely was one of my three picks as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's one of mine as well.
Oh, look, I don't think it's like if you asked 100 people, 99 people would say that, you know, or maybe even 100 people would say that that's in the, you know, one of the greatest ever. you know, it's just it's a no-brainer, definitely.
Yeah, for sure. And it's like Stacey said, like, it has built up. So you had that, like, millennium countdown for ages. Like, was it months? Because it felt like months. Like,
yeah.
And then I remember someone, there was something online even back then saying, like, well, the way it's counting down and the consistency between Raws and things like that, it's due to finish about the first, like, around the first hour of Raw on Monday, the whatever it is, August something. So people were like, oh, okay, so it is like going to be a legit sort of stop the clock, who is it kind of moment. It's not just kind of like, oh, the countdown finished on the weekend, so we'll find out who it was on, you know, on Monday Raw or whatever. So, yeah. So yeah, and then for it to be Jericho, like, obviously, like, we've all seen the lights go out, the music starts, which is different because obviously it was different music than Jericho, so it wasn't like, you know, someone coming back and you heard their music again, for instance. Like, if the Warrior had run out or something, you would have heard the Warrior's music and people would have gone, oh, it's the Warrior. And then just as the word Jericho appears on the screen, it's just this massive, like, cheer from the crowd. So,
yeah,
you know, people were anticipating him arriving once he had sort of left WCW, basically.
Yep.
And then obviously other people were legit surprised and excited that it was him as well. So it just sort of like ticked all the boxes, you know, and to go up against The Rock straight away was clever, I think, because Jericho was good in WCW and like had some of my favorite stuff that he ever did, but it was never like, apart from that little kind of tease with Goldberg, like, it was never up against any of the main stars, you know, like, so he wasn't sort of on the mic up against, you know, DDP or Hogan or Savage or any of these other guys that could sort of hang with him, really. So to see him actually go back and forth with The Rock, who was arguably the biggest star in the company at the time, like, it's no small feat.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, he wasn't a super mega star in WCW, and I really think that they dropped the ball with that. But, you know, to WWE's credit, Vince McMahon's credit, he saw what was in him, and he gave him that great debut, and it just went from there.
Yeah, and another thing, like, with The Rock, at the end of the segment, The Rock kind of got the last laugh, but the thing that was so great is The Rock gave Jericho his time to shine in that promo. Like, he didn't make it all about himself.
Yeah.
He definitely gave Jericho his moment, which was perfect.
Yeah. And it just the, like, that to me, like, all the people that were like, oh, you know, they should do more with Jericho, he could be a big star, you know, kind of like that kind of, that debut against The Rock, like, completely validated all of those people that were saying that, you know, and sort of, I think, shut down a lot of the people that were like, yeah, like, Jericho's good, but he's good because he's only going up against, like, Perry Saturn and Conan and these guys, you know what I mean? So he looks good because he's, like, he talks well on the mic because those guys can't, and he looks good in the ring because, you know, they're not as good or not as flashy, and, you know, can he hang with the big boys? But, you know, he's walked in and matched it with The Rock pretty much from day one.
Yep.
And then, yeah, and then he got sort of sidetracked a bit and all that, but obviously overcame all that. So, but, you know, we're not talking about the debut feuds or anything like that. We're just talking about that initial, here he is. And, I mean, if you just look at that segment that Jericho turns up in, then I don't see how it couldn't be on anyone's list. So,
oh, for sure.
Even like top 10 list, let alone not top 3. So,
yeah.
So now one across the board from the get-go, I think. So,
yeah,
I agree. Yeah.
All right. So, well, Steve, do you want to go, even though we've sort of, like we said, you and I have Jericho as well, but do you want to go with who would be your, I guess, your second choice?
Yeah. This actually turned out to be a bit tougher than what I thought it was going to be, because when we discussed doing this topic, I thought, oh, yeah, this, and this. But then I looked a little bit deeper. I'm like, oh, yeah, I forgot about this or I forgot about that. There's Let's see. Okay. My second one. This happened. I just got to get my notes back up. Sorry, my phone's locked itself out. this happened on an episode of Raw back in 2002. Nobody ever thought they would see this guy in a WWE ring. And he ended up being the general manager of Raw, Eric Bischoff.
Nice.
It's my third pick.
I love Eric Bischoff. I think he's awesome. Just to see him on Raw after what he did to Vince McMahon, they put Vince McMahon out of business. He almost made him go broke. But to see, I guess Vince saw that, you know, he was just a businessman, and, you know, on air he was the GM of Raw for a while, and he really did a really good job at that. But just that, the initial reaction, just the shock and awe of everybody. And the fact, he gives Vince McMahon a hug when he comes out on stage. It's just like, what the hell? I just couldn't believe it. I never thought I'd see him in WWE or WWF at all.
Yeah, they completely – it's this phrase at the moment for movies where you're like, we're subverting the audience's expectations, you know, like as almost as an excuse for like to – do whatever you like, and if someone didn't like it, it's like, oh, but we subverted your expectations. It's like, no, you just, oh, sorry, one of my statues just fell over. but yeah, like this really did, it really did subvert people's expectations, because obviously if you were told like, oh, Bischoff's coming into WWF, he's going to be like leading some kind of faction against Vince McMahon or...
Yeah.
You know, they're going to be enemies right off the bat. But then for him to essentially, like, the storyline was that Vince McMahon hired Eric Bischoff and their buddy buddies. Like, it was like, yeah, like you said, holy shit.
Yep.
Yeah, I mean, the only thing, like, as I said, this is top three for me as well. But the only thing that bumps it down for me slightly is the fact that you can see Bischoff in a scene backstage, I think with Booker T, before his actual reveal. Yeah. And that is such a drop the ball moment. Like, I don't know who thought to do that. Thankfully, it didn't take away from the whole moment itself, but I can't help but think what could have been if they didn't tease him earlier in the night. But yeah, this is like, I guess to put it into perspective to non-wrestling fans who were totally not listening to the show, it's like the equivalent of like Bill Gates shaking Steve Jobs' hand or something. Like, it's just something you would, they're at once, you know, competitors that we never thought would join forces. And I guess at the end of the day, Vince still has the upper hand because, you know, he's hiring Eric Bischoff as his right-hand man. But yeah, it's an interesting moment. And one of my favorite parts in that debut is like a line in commentary from JR where he says they're probably picking each other's pockets when they hug.
That was a fantastic line.
Yeah.
I agree 100%. I was going to bring that up about the little backstage moment that kind of spoiled it. But yeah, I think had that been, like, if WCW had still been around, for instance, and McMahon had got Bischoff over to come, you know, work for him against WCW in a kind of like a Vince Russo kind of way, you know, I think they would never have done that. I think they would have left it as the shock value because it's, you need to watch the whole show because anything can happen, you know, that kind of thing. Yeah. Whereas I think looking back at it, I think, the only reason I could give for it is they must have thought, like, look, if we tease Bischoff now, everyone will call all their friends and go, holy fuck, like, Bischoff is going to be on Raw. And then after the commercial break, we're all watching it now, you know.
Yeah.
But, yeah, sometimes, you know, like, sometimes you gotta push that, like, rating or business acumen aside for the actual story, you know, like it's... It would have been so much better if it was just like, and the new GM, Bischoff. What the fuck? Like, it would have been incredible. But yeah. So, but no, I agree. I thought Bischoff's run was still very underrated.
Yep. I think he's the best general manager they've ever had.
Yeah.
Hands down. Yeah.
Like he had sort of, he was able to feud with like Steve Austin and John Cena without being a wrestler. And especially like against Austin when neither of them were wrestlers at the time because Austin wasn't wrestling either. So, and yet it was still like probably one of the hottest feuds, you know, going on. And yet it's like these guys aren't ever even really going to have a match. So,
yeah. And he also like went head to head with Stephanie McMahon when she was GM of SmackDown.
That's right.
Which really like built up that competitiveness of the brands at the time.
Yeah. I remember that one where it was, what was it? Was it a wedding or something? He was dressed up as like this old man.
Billy and Chuck's, wasn't it?
That's right. Was it that one? Yeah. And then all of a sudden, you know, he's like, oh, he's old man. I don't know what to do, you know. And then he's like, you got 3 minutes. And he's like, normal voice. Everyone's like, what the fuck? Like, that's one of the like biggest surprises, I think, in that sort of era when, you know, like after the Monday Night Wars, because it was just like, that was a legit surprise. I don't think anyone thought like, oh, it's Bischoff under makeup. Everyone just thought it was like this old man.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that was good. But no, that's a good pick as well. Like having, I didn't even think of Bischoff. I don't know why. I'm going to go a little different. And I guess this is my chance to, I guess, do what Stacey normally does. And I'm going to go with Roddy Piper. But Roddy Piper's WCW debut.
Yep.
Because where was it? Halloween Havoc, 1996.
Yep.
And yeah, Hogan is basically there in the ring at the end of the pay-per-view talking about how like he's got the title and no one can stop him and he's on top of the world of wrestling and I've always been on top and I made wrestling what it is and like full Hollywood Hogan heel stuff, you know. And the Giant's out there with him, so he's like, I'm untouchable, blah, 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 blah. All of a sudden, like, the bagpipes start, and the best thing that sells it to me is, like, you get the usual commentator thing of, like, what's this? What's going on? You know, this sort of shit. And Bobby Heenan is the one that just goes, oh, no. it's like, oh, no, he knows because it's, in the world of WCW, you know, Tony Schiavone and Mike Tenay and these guys are like, what's going on? What's bagpipes? You know? And, yeah, Heenan is just like, it can't be. No way. And then, yeah, out he comes. And I think, like, it was the perfect moment to bring Piper in when you have a heel Hogan on top of the world of WCW, which, like we've always said, that automatically makes Piper a face. You know, because he's meant to always be on the opposite end of the spectrum to Hogan. So, and then Piper gets in and cuts like a killer promo that could probably almost should have made my top three promos, I think, when I look back at it when we did that episode. But yeah, he comes in and he's like, you know, because Hogan says to him, like, be very careful, Piper, you know. And the first thing Piper says is, yeah, I made a lot of money being real careful. then he says, I don't care, I'm gonna shoot with this one, which is pretty funny. Like back then, you know, I don't think too many other people knew the vernacular and stuff, but
yeah,
you know Hogan does then try and suck up to him and sort of be like, oh look, I know I said I ruled wrestling, but I meant like we were neck and neck and all this kind of shit. But then Piper goes on to like this awesome promo and he basically says, like, you say professional wrestling wouldn't be what it is without you. And he's like, well, you wouldn't be who you are without me. Then it's just like, it goes from there. And like the crowd is just eating it up. So I just think like for all the guys that they brought in from WWF, you know, like you compare that to the Warrior like fiasco, you know what I mean? Because it was a similar kind of deal. Like, here's a guy from back in the day that Hogan didn't beat. And, like, how poorly managed that was compared to the debut of Piper, which was pretty much perfect. Like, it's night. So, yeah, I had to go with that.
Nice. Yeah, I can't believe I didn't even think of that. But I was just kind of thinking, like, WWE debuts because as I've said many times before, I wasn't a big WCW watcher back in the day, but I did follow a part of Piper's career while he was there, or at least look back on it. And yeah, that is an amazing moment. And I've mentioned on the show before how much I love Piper's face run in WCW. And yeah, it's a cracker of a promo. Like, there's a comment that stands out to me, and I'm probably going to misquote it, but I remember he said something like, "Do you think they would have like loved you so much if they didn't hate me?" And yeah, it just perfectly like sums up, you know, like I've gone on and on about it before, but Piper has to be, you know, credited to Hogan's and WWF success in the early 80s. You know, you can't put all of that on Hogan's shoulders.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I just thought everything that they did, that Piper did in that promo, was just like exactly what you needed. You know, like it gave Hogan this new legitimate threat, because it's like, he's the guy, you know. And then even like, he's the guy that he couldn't beat, you know. But then even in the feud that they went on with, obviously Hogan does then beat him. But that helped that whole NWO storyline, because it was like, oh Christ, like Hogan could never beat this guy, and now he has. Like, well, who's going to stop him now? You know, so like, it really helped put over, like, not that Hogan needs putting over, but the storyline and the threat of the NWO and that kind of stuff, like, Piper really helped put that over, like, even more so. And then I think from there, then you're really looking at sort of WCW dominance, if, you know, for when they say it was 83 weeks or whatever. So, where they then just was like, oh shit, this is the real deal. Like, now they got Piper as well, like, and Savage and Hogan and Hall and Nash and, you know, all that. So,
yeah.
So now we have to give love to Piper on this show, and so
always
on.
For sure.
Always.
All right. So, what do we got? We might have to do a couple of backups, because I thought originally if we have the same, that's all right, you know, but
I think it's going to be quick. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm. So, all right. So we might do a couple extras then. Yeah. All right, so we're back to Stacey, I think.
Yes.
Because Steve had
a good shot. Stacey will probably have another one of mine as well.
Yeah, so this is my number two pick, and I have a feeling it will be someone's as well, because it's a cracker. So it is a guy who debuted in 1997. It is the one and only Kane. So Kane debuted on the Bad Blood pay-per-view, when that was still a thing. As I'm sure you all know, during the Hell in a Cell match between The Undertaker and Shawn Michaels. So much like the Jericho thing, this debut had been teased for months prior, amidst Paul Bearer's falling out with The Undertaker. And there was all this talk about, you know, his younger brother coming back, and we sort of learned a bit more about The Undertaker's backstory and how, you know, the funeral home where they resided in was set on fire. It was his fault, and it killed their parents, et cetera, et cetera. And Kane was badly burnt in the process. So basically, Kane debuts with Paul Bearer as his manager. And this is going to be like the most Aussie saying ever, but I have to go there. You know, from the moment that he rips the cage door from its hinges, that Kane's not here to fuck spiders.
Yes.
Yeah. Nice.
And yeah, it's an amazing moment. I remember the day that I watched it, and I remember Vince's commentary saying, "That's got to be Kane." Yeah, like, upon first impression, Kane was the Undertaker's complete match physically. And we hadn't really seen anyone of his stature prior to this, maybe except for Diesel. And
Giant Gonzalez, come on.
Yeah, well, didn't come to mind. But, yeah, I think this has to be in the conversation for top debuts.
Yep. Definitely, I agree. It didn't make my top three, but it's definitely in my top six I have listed down. but, yeah, look, I think, I like you, I remember that whole, that's got to be Kane, that's got to be Kane. That just made it, like, pop out for me, yeah.
Yeah, that's one of those, like, iconic Vince McMahon commentary moments.
Yeah.
He's had a few, obviously, from back in the day, but that one particularly, I think, a lot of people, like, you mentioned Kane and Kane's debut, and most people will say that, like, oh, that's got to be Kane, you know, like, yep. it's just the go-to, so.
Yeah. And the build-up as well, like you said, Stacey, it was a good build-up to it. It was like a slow burn type thing.
Yeah.
No pun intended.
Yeah. Yeah, if only they did that sort of thing still, you know, like these, like they're so keen on that quick 15-minute rating, you know, the quarter hour or whatever it is, or trying to get the advertisers. It's like they don't seem to realize that, like, if you tease people over a month or two, they'll really watch and then you got them, you know, like it's not just... Oh yeah, we kept them watching for 20 minutes. It's like, no, we kept them watching for 20 years.
Yeah.
So it's just But I think the way that Kane came in too was perfect. Like, you're gonna have this big red monster who doesn't speak initially, at least. So you need someone to talk for him. And it's like, well, then you think, well, who have you got that's like a manager? And of course, you come up with Paul Bearer, but it's like, well, oh, that would be even better because he's got the Undertaker connection and all that kind of stuff. So,
yeah,
I'm sure a lot of it when they were sort of spitballing, kind of like it sort of wrote itself almost. But that's how you know it's a good idea, I guess.
Yeah, it's definitely a better idea than Isaac Yankem.
Yeah, for sure. The fake diesel.
Yeah. Yeah, no, very good choice.
And just the look of Kane as well is perfect.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He really is that mixture of, like, Jason and Michael Myers, you know, like that horror movie big fucker with a mask is just, you know, slow moving. Like, it's, perfect. I thought so.
And I know, like, we're talking about the debuts here, but I feel like I've got to mention, like, how amazing that feud was with The Undertaker at the time. Like, that was the most invested I was in wrestling, like, watching week to week growing up. And, like, I remember when he set the casket on fire with The Undertaker in it, and I can't remember how many weeks he was off TV, but it felt like a lifetime. And when he returned, it was just amazing. And, it's a great moment in wrestling.
Yeah, definitely. And, look, he gave us someone like Kane who's you know, been a good company man. He's been excellent to watch over the last, 20-odd years.
Yeah, for sure.
And that match as well, just being that it was a Hell in a Cell match with Shawn Michaels. And then you think, like, people went into that thinking, like, this is, like, Undertaker's finally going to get him, you know, like this.
Yeah.
Where's he going to go? Like, this cocky fucking HBK, like, you know, oh, I hate him so much. And then Kane comes out of nowhere and obviously indirectly, but helps Shawn Michaels win. And it's like, fuck, he's won again. Like, it worked on so many levels because it didn't just introduce this new character who's an immediate main eventer. It sets up the feud with Undertaker, and also, like, it served a purpose. It helped legitimately let Shawn, like, give, not legitimately because it was obviously wasn't clean, but it gave a legitimate reason as to how Shawn Michaels could have won that match.
True. Yeah.
And then obviously Shawn Michaels went off to, you know, other feuds and stuff with the title and things like that. And then meanwhile, now you've got Undertaker, you know, in a feud with his brother. So,
yep.
And like we said on previous shows, like, Undertaker and Kane are kind of the Thor Loki of the WWE, you know, where they can almost kill each other, but then they can be tag team partners and proper brothers because you think, well, they hate each other. It's like, yeah, but they're brothers.
They're brothers. Yeah, exactly. So
they'll always you know, kayfabe brothers, obviously, but still, like, yeah. So it's like they, that's the one team you can split apart and put back together and split apart and, you know, rinse, repeat all the time, because you do have that sort of storyline insurance almost of like, yeah, but they're brothers.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
So, yeah. No, that's good. Good old Kane. I didn't have it on my list, but I had it down as like a little honourable mention, just because I figured someone would say it, but I thought just in case, you know.
Yeah, I was almost not going to take it. So I was like, oh, am I being too selfish taking the good ones? But I'm glad I did.
Yep.
Yeah. Just like you were on Unfunny Nerd Tangent first.
That's right.
All right, fuck you guys. My next choice is a Radicals because of Chris Benoit.
I did look at that. I thought that was a potential, you know, like legit, you know, I was looking into it. I thought that could be a legit entry, but
yeah.
But then I was like, oh no, there's better than that.
So, yeah, it definitely is. Yeah.
But they did that really well. Like I've never really been a fan of any of those guys, really. Eddie, to a degree, but yeah, not as much as, honestly, though, but not as much as a lot of other people. Like, I respect his skills and all that, but I was never sort of 100% like, yeah, Eddie Guerrero, you know, like, it was just like, oh, yeah, he's good, you know. And, like, obviously his matches were great, but the way that they brought him in was good, I thought, how they sort of, the four of them had left WCW, and the fact that they all signed together and then they actually used that and brought them all in together, like, that was pretty cool.
Yeah.
Because, like, they could have staggered that, like, here's Benoit and here's Malenko and, you know, so.
I don't think they were big enough names at the time for that to happen, I don't reckon. I think, like, that they were good, like you said, but I think WWF made them bigger superstars.
Yeah, I guess maybe. Like, Guerrero probably could have debuted on his own because even at the time, he still had a decent following as far as fans and stuff, like from WCW. And, and he had the, it sounds stupid to say, but the whole, like, Latino world order. But, like, that did put a spotlight on him for a bit because he had this on camera sort of feud with Bischoff and stuff, you know?
Yeah. So. Well, I think the biggest thing there was, you know, Chris Benoit had won the WCW title, didn't he, on the pay-per-view week before or something?
Yeah, yeah, just before.
And he just walked out and threw the belt on the ground and walked out.
Yeah, because they brought Sullivan back. They got rid of Russo for the first time, and then, Sullivan was going to be in charge. And they, the story goes that they pretty much said, well, anyone who's not happy, you can leave.
Yep.
And we'll give you your release. And so Raven apparently went first, was like, yep, fuck it, I'm out. And then, Benoit and the others followed him. So, and then Shane Douglas showed how full of shit he really is because he stuck around and cashed his check. So, hey, good for him. You know, money's money. I probably would have done the same thing, but Mr. Big Mouth, independent, you know, I'm anti. Anti-fucking everything. Establishment money shit. When it was time to talk the talk, he fucking, you know, he sat back and, you know, oh, I'd be a tag team with Buff Bagwell.
He only ever did one good thing, and that was that promo for the ECW belt.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah. So made a name. Like, as much as like he likes to shit on Flair, it's like without Flair, you was nothing.
You were nothing, exactly right.
Because you made your career on bad-mouthing Flair.
Yep.
So... without that, what are you? You're just another guy. You know?
Another jabroni.
Yeah, you know, good promo skills and that. Like, he could have been a really good manager for someone, I think. I mean, like a Bobby Heenan in a way where you've got that manager who can wrestle a bit too, but obviously not to the degree of Heenan, but then nobody is, you know, so.
Yeah, exactly. But, you know, fun fact, he was the IC champion for, about a day?
True. Yeah. I mean, he's not, like I said, like Shane Douglas, he was all right. But, I just thought it was funny that even he knew if he quit WCW, then that was it.
Because, oh, he was, yeah.
he burnt his bridges in WWF already. So
yep, exactly.
So, but anyway. And like we said, Flair doesn't give a fuck. He'll work with anyone.
Yeah.
For all Flair's faults, you know, he still seemed to be pretty professional when it comes to, you know, you have to have a match with this guy and lose. Okay, whatever.
Except when he left WCW for the WWF the first time.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah. So.
But that was over money, wasn't it, for the belt?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. Because, yeah, he wasn't happy with the bookers again. And then I think someone then realized that the title, Flair actually owned the title.
That's right.
So he just took it with him.
Yep. It was the real world's champion.
Yeah, that it all blurred out and shit. Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. God.
That was cool.
Anyway, we digress.
That's right, yeah. We gotta get it. Like Piper, we gotta get Benoit in there somewhere.
Yeah, exactly.
Of course.
Exactly.
All right. Well, I'm trying to think. Do you wanna go, Steve? Or
yep,
do you
want I'll go to next.
Bring it home at the end?
I'll go next. Okay, so are we still having another pick each after this, or are we just going with the first pick as our first pick?
Yeah, we'll go one more.
One more? Okay. All right.
I'm feeling generous.
Okay, well, I'll leave. I'll throw this one out there now. Happened, once I say the year, I think everyone will know, 1996. It's over a couple of weeks. One person debuted 1 week, and then the next one debuted a few weeks later. Talking about Hall and Nash on Nitro. Look, I couldn't have a debut show without the guys who started the NWO and the Reading Wars. Hall invaded Nitro, came out through the crowd May the 27th, 1996, grabbed a microphone, went straight into the ring, started saying all this shit, you know. He's declaring war on WCW. Yeah, no, everyone's playing it up. Oh, who is this guy? Blah, blah, blah. Doesn't he still work, you know, for WWF? And he came out in another couple of weeks saying he's got a big surprise for everyone. And lo and behold, that big surprise was Kevin Nash a couple of weeks later. And they came out and the good thing about this debut was, one, like, people sort of knew, I guess, but there was no dirt sheets back then. So us over here in Australia, I guess we had no idea what was going on. And they legitimately had this thing going where people thought that they were actually still working for the WWF and trying to infiltrate WCW to take them out. But obviously that legitimately went to court and that had to be stopped. But just these two debuting on Nitro changed the course of wrestling as we know. And I just had to have it in there.
Yeah, I think that's you gotta look to that as, I guess, the declaration of the Monday Night Wars, like, all right, shit's on kind of thing.
Yeah.
You know. What is he? Hey yo, I'm not here to fuck spiders.
Like, yeah, like he was still using the accent. He had the toothpick. And so everyone legitimately thought it was that, you know, it was him and he was there to infiltrate and he was still employed by the WWF. I just think it was done really, really well.
Yeah. And then for Nash to turn up as well, because like Diesel and Razor, they weren't really, like, there was no tag team.
No.
You know, of those two in WWF. Well, obviously, there was the curtain call thing, but I mean, back then, it's like, no, not many people would know about that. So
yeah, that's right. Well, that footage stayed hidden for a while. Like that was just something that Vince wanted hidden on everything.
Yeah, that's it. And like I said, especially for down here, it wasn't like, oh, what, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
So it was just like, oh shit, all right, this is happening now.
Weren't those guys on WWF? Yeah.
So and for Nash, like you said, for Nash to then be like the next guy, it's like, oh fuck, like, all right. Like, shit's happening now. So, and like you said, they did as much as they said they weren't, they were really pretending that they were Razor and Diesel.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Because they weren't even like, they weren't calling them anything. They were just like saying, "Oh, this guy, he's back." You know, "Oh, who's that? What's he doing here?" That sort of stuff.
Yeah,
and that's where the outsiders' name came into it, because they're like, "Well, we got to call him something."
Yeah, true. Yeah,
like, do we want to call him Scott Hall? Do we want to call him Kevin Nash? Not yet.
Yeah.
So they're like, "Oh, these outsiders. Yeah, that'll do. Let's go with that." So, and then that's the classic. Classic name for, you say the outsiders and everyone just goes, yeah, Hall and Nash.
That's right.
So, yeah. Either that or, you know, Stay Gold, Pony Boy. One of them. Stacey, how old you are.
Did you see that at all, Stacey? Or that?
I actually didn't. And like, you've inspired me to check it out after the show.
Read the book.
I've seen, obviously, like Hogan's. Is it Hogan's debut when he teams with Hall and Nash in WCW?
No, that's his heel turn.
That's his heel turn, sorry.
But, yeah, I haven't actually seen Hall's debut. So was Nash's, like, shortly after?
Yeah.
Yeah, like two or 3 weeks later or something.
Yeah, because Hall came out by himself and then he kept, you know, saying there's – you know, he's not alone, it's someone else. And then the week before Nash, he's like, "I've got a big surprise." And then obviously the big being Kevin Nash.
Yeah. He powerbombed Bischoff through the stage.
That's right.
Yep. Bischoff was like, you know, "I'm sick of you." And he's like, "Well, I've got a big surprise for you next week," you know. And then, as the next week or week later, whatever it was. And then, Bischoff's there like berating Hall and Nash just turns up behind him. It's like, oh, fuck. And then, he powerbombed him through the stage. So it was really like, what the fuck?
Yeah,
like,
that's right.
But he's just like the commentator guy. Like, holy shit. Yeah. You know? So, and that's all, like, as much as they're all, "Oh, Vince McMahon did this and that." I mean, Bischoff started all that shit.
He did.
You know, like the evil boss and beating up wrestlers, like characters that aren't wrestlers and all that sort of shit. Like, you know, so, yeah. How he's not in the Hall of Fame, just this fucking bullshit.
I got no idea. But no idea.
We discussed that, so go back to episode whatever it was. And listen to our episode of who we thought should be in the Hall of Fame. Episode 2.
Was it? Wow.
Oh, wow.
Seems like a long time ago now.
It was.
Yeah. And like, just the one thing I liked about this one too, once again, it wasn't quick and over and done with. It was a little slow burn and boom, big crescendo.
Yeah, and then it obviously then you had the two of them, you know, sort of running riot for a while, and it's, oh fuck, you know, it's like, well, we've got a third man who, you know, oh fuck, who's the third man gonna be? Yep. And then of course.
But whose side is he on?
Yeah, well, Terry Hair Hat came down and off they went. So, yeah. And then it was really, oh, fuck. So I could just see Vince McMahon being like, oh, what? Hall turned up on Nitro. All right. Oh, Nash is there too now. Okay. I'm like, what the fuck? Like, Hogan's turned and he's with them? Oh, okay.
What am I going to do now?
Maybe let Steve talk after all.
Yeah, we'll get rid of Duke the Jumpster, Drosy, and Bastion Booger, and we'll go for realism.
Tell DiBiase he doesn't need to talk to Steve Austin anymore.
Yeah.
We'll just maybe let him do his thing.
Yeah. We'll let Jake, DX do whatever Jake they do? Like.
Well, that's good, though, Steve, that you picked the Outsiders, because that transitions into my third pick, which is also the NWO, but it's the NWO when they turned up in WWF.
Yeah.
Because as much as that story may have fizzled out to be a bit of a downer, the debut at No Way Out, of all things, which is fucking perfect, because you've got NWO, No Way Out, like, just...
I think that is why they did it.
Yeah, it's fantastic. Like, it's brilliant.
Yeah.
And I remember saying, like, the whole storyline, which a lot of people forget, was... like, Vince McMahon and Ric Flair were meant to be 50-50 partners in the company. That was the whole thing. Like, Shane sold his stock and bought WCW. Stephanie did the same and bought ECW. And then they tried to take Vince out of, you know, out of business with ECW, WCW Alliance and that kind of thing. And it's like, that was all over and done with. Flair turns up and it's like, with they actually, like a rare moment of continuity, they actually were like, you remember when Shane and Stephanie sold their stocks? And it was like, it was to me. Like, oh, fuck, they actually remembered something. And so Flair's 50-50 partners with Vince, and Vince is like, fuck this, I'm going to destroy the WWF because I don't want anything to do with it. If I'm going to be partners with Flair, I'd rather be out of business. Like, I created it, I'm going to kill it. And how do you kill a company? You bring in the NWO.
I remember because he was sitting in front of a mirror, wasn't he? He's like, yeah. Inject the poison or something like that. And yeah, it was really, that was a good promo, actually.
He spins around and because he's talking to the mirror. So it's like shot over his shoulder. So you're seeing his face, but reflected. And then when he spins around to face the camera, you see the back of his chair and it had NWO on it.
Oh, yeah. That was good.
And it was like, what the fuck? Like, I was just like, oh, shit. Like, so that was cool. And then, of course, it's like he was there in the ring with Flair, I think, on the – it must have been Raw or SmackDown, whichever one it was. It was basically the go-home show before the No Way Out pay-per-view. And he's like, you know, I'm going to kill the WWF. I'm going to bring it. And he gets them because these men are on their way. And it cuts to the Titantron. And you see the three of them there. Like, it's Hogan, Hall, Nash. It's like, oh, fuck, he's doing it. It's not, oh, the NWO, and he brings out, you know – Stevie Ray and Buff Booker Bagel T and something. Buff Bagel. Yeah, it wasn't just like the NWO with my guys. It's like, no. Like,
it's legit.
The NWO, and like, there they are. It's like, oh, fuck. So that was a massive, like, hype up for that pay-per-view because it's just like, what the fuck's going to happen? And then they opened the pay-per-view. Like, the first thing, it's welcome to new No Way Out, blah, blah, blah. And then it's just like, bow, wow, off it goes. We're like, there's the music. Fuck, here they come. Like,
So that was awesome.
And then the what I thought was good with the debut is they took their time with it. So, you know, Nash gets on the mic first and he's talking about, you know, oh, people don't want us here and they're, you know, they're calling us like cancer and this sort of stuff. And it's like, well, that hurts our feelings. Like, it's all, I'm a heel, but, you know, you still kind of like me sort of thing. Hall gets the mic and people cheer straight away. Like, they are, because at that point, you hadn't seen Hall for a long time because he hadn't even been in WCW. So it's sort of, you know, he'd been missing for a while, like, because he got fired or they didn't renew his contract. Like, he wasn't around in WCW when it folded. So all of a sudden he's back and, like, the crowd just went berserk and obviously Hey Yo got the big pop and, yeah. And then Hogan gets the mic and all of a sudden you can see the crowd turn and it's like, oh, they're behind the NWO. So this could be a problem.
Yeah.
So, but, yeah, just the way they did that and then, the initial storylines then where you led to Hogan, Rock, and even Hall Austin. Like, a lot of people shit on that feud, but I still think it was pretty good. But, yeah, I just think, like, that as a faction, like, coming from WCW and, like, everything about the debut they did right, and then after that maybe not so much, but it did lead to Hogan, Rock at Mania, which, yeah, I think everyone is, you know, agrees is pretty much – like a highlight of every WrestleMania.
Yep.
Yeah, for sure. Yep. No, it's a good choice. I wouldn't, I never even thought of it, to tell you the truth, but I can, yeah, definitely see why you put it in there.
Yeah, I definitely, like, it's a debut that comes to mind when you think of iconic and memorable debuts, but I'm not like a big NWO girl or Hogan girl, as you're all aware, but you can't deny it's an amazing moment. And it was sort of my proper introduction to NWO, as I wasn't a big WCW fan in the day. And I still remember, I'm pretty sure my brother owned this one on, I guess it's probably VHS at the time. I remember, like, it was a really awesome cover with the No Way Out logo, but they kind of spray painted NWO over the top of it. And they were on the front of the cover.
That's right. Yeah. Hey,
a little fun fact.
just do yourself a favor and jump on the WWE Network, only $9.99 a month, and check out some old Nitros.
I think it's actually like $12.99 a month, AUD.
Yeah. Assholes, that's how they get us.
Yeah.
Damn exchange rates.
Yeah, so I had to go with that just because, like I said, I loved the NWO. So, and I think I particularly liked that because I think seeing Scott Hall again after, you know, at least a year or so.
Yeah.
And for him to be back, and it's like, because it was pretty much to that point of like, oh, he's done.
Yep.
So to have Hall back and to have the crowd give those three guys like that respect as well, and so it wasn't just like, oh fuck you guys, you sort of left and you're WCW, or like, we're meant to boo you because we're the trained monkeys type of thing. Yeah. It's like, no, they actually were like, yeah, but we know we're meant to boo, but like, how awesome is this? Like, this is shit that you never thought you would see.
That's
like,
true.
It was then that's what they, around that time, that was the shit that was going on. It was like, holy fuck, like, you never thought you would see the NWO in a WWF ring, you know. Then at the end of the night, basically attack Steve Austin and shit like that. So
yeah.
So, yeah. And it led to the Rock promo where he's giving him shit backstage.
Oh,
he's like, oh, look, it's Diesel. All that shit, yeah.
Yep. Chico, Razor Ramon.
So yeah, I love all that. That was good. So.
Yeah, it was.
Also, that like Kane moment with NWO.
Oh,
do you remember that where he goes like full Hogan?
Yeah, that's right. What you gonna do? It's like, oh fuck. Every now and then, Kane must have just been like, I can do other things.
Yeah, it's a rare breaking character moment.
Yeah. No, definitely. Good old Kane. He could, like when they took the mask off, I think everyone thought, it's going to be shit. But then it was fantastic for a while, you know. And then even corporate Kane served his purpose. So.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Another one that we put in our Hall of Fame. So come on, Vince, get on it.
It's time.
Right. Bischoff and Kane, that's all you need. And yep. William Regal. There you go.
Mm-hmm. Class of 2021.
Yeah. Perfect.
Owen.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Out of nowhere.
What do you mean? Come on. Owen.
All right. So we'll do one more, I think, if you guys have got any spares or honorable mentions, since we tripled up on Jericho and you guys doubled up on Bischoff. So.
Yep.
Which sound dirtier than I meant it, but you know what I mean. Easy. All right. Stace, who you got for you?
All right. So this was an honorable mention, but it's now gone in as my number three. So bear with me. Obviously don't have notes for this. Don't have my facts straight. And I'm going to surprise you with this one because I just went on about how I'm not a big WCW person. But one of the best debuts, especially revisiting it this week, which I did when I was watching a few videos back, was Goldberg in WWE. So this was on the March 31st episode of Raw 2003. Correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe this is the Raw after WrestleMania. If it's not, it's close.
Yep. I think it is.
So again, it's another Rock promo. He is Hollywood Rock at the time, which I personally love, big fan of. And he's just come fresh off Mania 19, I believe. He's just beat Stone Cold finally. And he's on top of the world and he's cutting a promo being a complete asshole as he was. And then, you see all of a sudden Goldberg backstage, doing his whole entrance, like you'd see him backstage walking before he gets to the gorilla position. And, you know, the music hits, the pyro hits, comes out, and Rock is selling the shit out of this. Like, he's shitting his pants. And, like, just, I'm not like a huge Goldberg fan, but he was so intimidating in this moment. You know, I know enough about WCW to know that he was like, you know, the top of the company for a long time. And yeah, to see this guy who pretty much ran the place in the main event of WCW against a Rock who did the same for WWF was just kind of like a dream match, really.
Mm-hmm.
And comes into the ring and they're standing off for a good couple minutes. They're just like walking circles. Like Rock is just backing away from him the whole time. And Goldberg is just so intimidating. You don't know what he's going to do, if he's going to get the mic or if he's just going to spear him straight away. And he grabs the mic and he says, everyone's talking about who's next. And he says, you're next. And boom, spears a Rock. And
yeah.
Amazing debut, amazing setup. It's a cracker
of a spear too.
It is.
Yeah.
That one and the one that he got Christian with that time. It's just like, oh, fuck. Like, he got all of that one.
Yeah.
The Christian one especially. Like, nearly. You wonder why Christian had to retire early, but that's probably why.
He's a big guy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a good one. That's another moment, like I was saying, around that time, that sort of early to mid-2000s where it was like, holy shit, like this is actually happening. Like this, you know, you never thought you would see Goldberg Rock. So,
oh, yeah.
For that to be happening on the screen, that was massive. So, and like, I loved Hollywood Rock too. I thought it was a great rendition of his character when he sort of came back for that little stint. That was good.
Yeah.
Some of his best mic work too, The Rock at the time. I know we're not making this about him, but yeah, it's amazing. And I can't think of like a better person to for him. You know, it's pretty hard to find an opponent that lives up to the hype after he's just beaten Stone Cold. But yeah, Goldberg was a great choice.
Yeah,
and like same goes the other way, you know, The Rock is a perfect first opponent in WWE for Goldberg.
Yeah, because at the time Triple H was in his sort of reign of terror. So
yeah, true.
You don't want to sort of, you want to go big but not too big. So especially with The Rock sort of only being really a part-timer even then, it was the perfect way to just go like, we'll put in, you know, we'll put Austin, like Austin's going to lose to Rock. And then, yeah, we can bring in Goldberg and like, oh, like a bit like the Hogan Piper thing from WCW. Like, oh, I've beaten everyone. I'm on top of the world laying there. Oh, shit. Like, here's this other guy. So,
yep.
And then, yeah, for Goldberg to come in as the force that he was and sort of maintain that initially was pretty good. So,
yeah.
I like that pick. So, yeah. Well, I might go next, Steve, and then you can close us out.
Okay.
Since, we sort of almost doubled up on NWO. I've got to go with Undertaker, I think. Just because of – it's more of the time when he debuted. Like 1990, he rocks up at Survivor Series. So it's November 1990s. But, you know, again, like Ted DiBiase sort of bringing in these guys. Like, you had Austin with DiBiase later. And then obviously you go a few years before that. And Undertaker is sort of the mystery partner of DiBiase and his team. But, yeah, I think you've got Undertaker and you watch that debut again and like there are kids in the crowd that are legitimately scared. Like you can see like little kids like, what the fuck? Like they're not just like, oh, boo, who's this guy? You can see they're a bit frightened of him, which we could sort of look at it and be like, it's pretty corny. He's dressed up like an old Western sort of Undertaker with the tie and the purple gloves and this kind of thing. But like for little kids, like, that's a huge man, like walking around with like black circles under his eyes and just the way that Taker sells it from the beginning, like that's a tough gimmick to pull off, like on paper. And like right from the start, it's like, oh shit, who's this guy? So, and I mean, in that match, he eliminates Dusty Rhodes in that match as well. So,
wow.
To come in and then be like, oh, hey, he just took out like Dusty Rhodes. Like,
and oh, he got rid of Coco Beware as well, another Hall of Famer.
There you go. But yeah, I think just having Taker sort of, that's another one where I think they were like, yeah, we want to do big things with this guy. So we're not just going to, like, he's not just going to turn up in a regular match or something. Like,
yeah,
it's a proper, like, theatrical debut. So similar to what they would do with Jericho, I guess, like, later. But, yeah, here's the debut of this character. And, like, look at him. And you, it's more of an entertainment, yeah, character-based thing. And then, oh, yeah, he's in the match as well. Yeah. But because you're sucking in by the character and the look of him and like, what is he doing? Like, he's real slow. It's like, is he meant to be a zombie? Like, what? Maybe? I don't know. So,
yeah. That's one of the things I really missed about like Taker's early work is how it's going to come off wrong, but how slow he moved in the ring, like between maneuvers, like he just sort of took his time and it really added to like the intimidation factor to me. I mean, yeah. Greg, you mentioned like Michael Myers earlier in the show. It's just kind of like, you know, when someone's being chased by a serial killer and they're just walking slowly, taking their time because they know they're going to destroy you.
Yeah. They're but, focused. Yeah. Like,
yeah. That's what I really liked about Taker's early work. And I wish he kind of kept that.
Yeah, just the slow movements. Yeah, it was good. So, and yeah, I think from where he started, like to make that impact in such a big way, obviously it worked because, you know, 30 years later, he's still the Undertaker. So,
yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, he beat Hogan for the title in 91, didn't he? So, yeah. I mean, that's not too far down the track from when he debuted. So, yeah.
So, and he was immediately in sort of, in and around the title picture because he was sort of, you know, like that Hogan match where he got the title, you know, Flair's floating around that. He sort of, yeah, he was involved. And then obviously Taker turns up in the Rumbles and he was always a big presence in them. And then, yeah, off he went. So
I like the stuff he did with Jake the Snake too. That was cool.
Yeah. And then of course, because he was such a built up character and stuff, when they turned him babyface, by sort of coming out against Jake, you know, like and whatever it was with the was he attacking Elizabeth or Savage?
Macho Man and that, yeah, at their wedding or something.
That's right, yeah. I just remember Undertaker being the one that came out, and it's like, what, Undertaker's here? Like, and he's what? It's like he's a good guy now, all right. But because you sort of were already invested in that character, people rolled with it. Because it's like, well, all right, I guess. But yeah, so I think it's all because of it was such a successful debut when he turned up in at Survivor Series the first time. So
yeah. Good choice. He's definitely, look, obviously if you don't have the debut, you don't have the Undertaker, so I think it's a good choice.
He just turns up and retires. Hey, my retirement match. Who are you?
Yep.
All right, so Steve, what do you got to bring us home?
I'm just deciding between two, but I'll go. All right, I'll go this one. Okay. I'm surprised. I thought Stacey might have chose this one. I'm going for Paige. Cool. NXT champion for ages, and then she comes out the night after WrestleMania on Raw. While AJ Lee's cutting this promo, and she comes out and basically, you know, tells AJ Lee that, you know, she's in awe of her, and you know, and then basically AJ Lee challenges to a match, and she doesn't want to do it, but then she ends up slapping her, and she goes ahead and does the match, and AJ Lee says, you know, for added extra, I'm going to put my title on the line, and Paige beats her, and not many people get to do that in their debut match on Raw, let alone still have the NXT championship as well at the time.
Yeah, and that's a good pick, actually. Oh, I've never thought of that, but yeah, and that's good because there had been talk about Paige, like, oh, there's Paige in NXT, they could bring her up, you know, everyone's like, oh, yeah, I guess. And then when she did turn up, I was like, oh, shit, all right. And then,
there was a lot of buzz about her, wasn't there? And, look, I just thought when we went and seen the movie, and obviously you see, you know, it's a bit dramatized, but when you realize, you know, her whole family was back in England watching, and it's just a feel-good moment, I guess. And look, if she hadn't have got injured, I'm sure she would have been multi-time champion. And it's a shame that she can't wrestle anymore. She can make movies, but definitely
another good debut.
Oh, Jesus.
She's got to be on there for me. You know, you don't win a title in your debut match, really, unless you're Santino as well, but we don't mention him.
Yeah, that's a great choice, and it was definitely one I considered. Obviously, I'm a huge AJ Lee fan, and I'm a huge Paige fan as well, and that definitely is one of the best post-WrestleMania Raw moments, in my opinion.
Yep.
I remember watching it live at the time, because I used to take, like, the day off after WrestleMania to watch it, and Paige was all the rage in NXT at the time. Obviously, she was the first ever NXT champion. She beat Emma in an amazing match at the time. AJ had just beaten, like, pretty much every diva on the roster the night before. And it was like, well, what's left to do? Like, what's left to accomplish? And then, it was really the perfect time to call Paige up. The only thing that is disappointing to me, I think it would have been great if she came out with the NXT title.
Yes.
Much like, say, Kevin Owens did with, like, John Cena, or Rhea Ripley did with Charlotte. I think it just makes her look stronger. And to the audience who isn't familiar with her, it's like, okay, she's a big deal somewhere.
Yeah. Definitely. I initially thought that as well. Like, oh, why doesn't she have the NXT title? But then I wonder if that would have almost given you a bit of false, like, a false feeling about it, you know, like, you're meant to think, like, this is like, oh, this poor girl is going to have her first match against AJ. Like, AJ's going to kill her.
Yeah.
Whereas if she walks out with a title, I guess it's kind of like, well, she beat someone.
Yeah. So. Well, wasn't NXT considered, like, pretty much developmental as well? I guess.
Yeah. But still, that's the only thing I could think of as to maybe why they didn't do that. But I think even then, I think she still should have, like, gone out with the NXT.
I think she should have,
Because all you got to do is work that into the promo and be like, that's the nice little belt you've got there. Like, the big leagues that just gets more heat on AJ for basically, like, shitting on all of NXT.
I think also they kind of, like, dulled characters Paige at the time, which was a little bit disappointing, because she was, like, known as ruthless in NXT, you know, like, she had a really aggressive fighting style, and then she comes out and she's like, oh, I just want to congratulate you, and she's all, like, shy and timid, and, like, I partially get it, because it's her first appearance on Raw, like, she's in the big leagues now, but yeah, that was a little bit disappointing. But I guess on the other hand, it kind of led to, like, months, or I don't even know how much further down the track, when she ended up turning heel against AJ, and she really kind of showed that character we saw back in NXT. But yeah, my criticism doesn't take away from the moment. It's still absolutely one of my favorite debuts post-WrestleMania Raw segments. And at this point also, AJ is the longest reigning Divas champion of all time. And this quote-unquote rookie, Paige, just comes and beats her in, like, 5 minutes.
Yeah.
I think looking back at it, like, sort of armchair booking and obviously the benefit of hindsight, I think what they almost could have done is, like, have her really play up the, like, naive rookie kind of thing, soft spoken and all this, and then when she wins, you know, she's walking back to the ring with the title and, you know, a little smirk on her face or something like that, like, haha, got you, you know, like,
yeah,
I'm not really like that. I'm Paige from NXT, and I'm brutal and vicious and this kind of thing. So I don't know, maybe that would have worked. But, yeah, again, like you said, Stace, not taking anything away from it, because that's, yeah. I agree, that's definitely one of the better post-WrestleMania moments, I think. So,
yeah.
And the crowd was, like, instantly behind her, like, straight away.
Yeah. And another thing is, like, it doesn't seem like much at the time, but I think this might – it's probably not the first, but it was at least the first in a very long time that women got a This Is Awesome chant.
Yeah, true.
Oh, yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I do think that if Paige hadn't gotten injured, she'd be still right up there with, you know, Charlotte, and she may have even got, like, the Becky Lynch role, you know.
Yeah.
Depending on, you know, how things went.
Yeah, it was just good too. Like, she could legitimately wrestle, you know what I mean? Like, it was, forget about the divas side of things. She was a legitimate wrestler, and that, you know, so was AJ Lee, and it was, yeah, it was good to see.
Yeah. They robbed me of my Kingdom faction, God damn it. She got injured.
Yeah. I may be naive, but I still hold out hope that a miracle can happen.
Well, look at
Edge.
Happened
to Daniel Bryan. An edge.
I would be interested to see what the reasoning is. Obviously, they're like, oh, you know, she hurt her neck and stuff. But I mean, it's like, well, these other guys can come back. Like, how bad could it be? But yeah. I guess bad enough. But I guess who knows?
Yeah, I don't know.
I think eventually she'll have another match, even if it's just one. But I don't know. Maybe it is bad enough where she, like, legit. Yeah.
Surely she could. She might be able to do a rumble or something somehow. I don't know.
Yeah.
You could always do that old thing of, like, the tag match, and, like, she's kept out of the match the whole match, and then you just get the hot tag and pretty much, like, beat everyone up and get the pin.
Yeah.
You know, because then you don't have to take any bumps. So,
yeah.
But anyway, that'd be, here's hoping.
yeah, that's right.
That's another good pick though, Steve. One that, again, I completely had forgotten about, much like Bischoff. So, but yeah. So to wrap up with our debuts, we did go with some extras than our regular three since we doubled up a little bit, but why not? It's our show. We do what we want. So we had some honorable mentions with Paige, like we said, Undertaker and Goldberg coming into the WWE. Stacey went with Kane, of course, because, yeah, that's pretty iconic. Steve, you went with the Outsiders in WCW, which kind of transitioned into my WWF debut of the NWO. You guys both had Bischoff, which I'm kind of ashamed of myself. I didn't even think of that, but at least someone got it, which is good. So we had Bischoff there. I went with WCW when Piper turned up as another debut, mostly because of the promo and just the fact that it really, everything he said was true. So got to remember that. And of course, all three of us chose Chris Jericho, being the Millennium Clock countdown man confronting the Rock on Raw. So
could I just give one shout out? The reason I was just couldn't decide between Paige and someone else, and it was the Shield. I thought theirs was pretty good.
I thought about them for a bit. That was well done too, I think, because it was out of nowhere again. Who are these guys? You know.
And I think it was better done than Nexus, because Nexus was, whilst it was good, it was hot, it just fizzled straight away. Whereas Shield, they kept going.
Yeah, they definitely learned their lesson from Nexus and kind of, you know, less is more. We only need three guys, but let's really push onto the moon. So.
Yeah, and let's actually let them have the titles and not lose to Cena.
Yeah, exactly. All right, well, that is episode 11 of Aussie Top 3. But before we get out of here, a quick reminder, follow us on Twitter. I'm at GregT13. Stacey is at Little Sherby. And Steve is at Stinger57. You can follow our account at Aussie Top 3. And as always, all roads lead to at the Steel Cage. Thanks again, guys, for another fun episode with our top threes. We might put another poll out, I think, for episode 12, and see what you guys think. But yeah, still plenty of topics left that we can wax on about.
Or if you guys have a topic that you want us to cover, just let us know as well.
Yeah, yep. Absolutely. Yeah. Hit us up at AussieTop3 on Twitter, and yeah, we will we'll look into
as
it for sure.
As followed by Vince Russo.
Yes. That's right. How can you have
imagine if he put in a suggestion. How good would that be?
He'd be like,
bloody oaf, yeah.
Top three matches
Vince
on a
Russo
pole.
Vince Russo moment.
Yeah. Judy Bagwell on a pole match.
Yeah. All right. Well, before Vince Russo unfollows us, this has been episode 11 of Aussie Top 3. And until next time, we'll see you next time.